This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to the Detroit Sports Rag podcast for Tuesday, November 17th. My name is Joff Mess. He is Justin Spiro at Darko State News on Twitter. Welcome, Justin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing better than last week. I'm now almost 2 weeks post-op from that major surgery I had to correct multiple hernias, so I'm feeling a lot better. Got a nice weekend in Columbus ahead with Jack Johnson of the NHL's Columbus Blue Jackets.
Already name-dropping 30 seconds into the
program. He's a former Olympian, silver medalist, third overall draft pick in the NHL draft. Great guy. We're staying with him and his wife
this weekend. Lynn.
So, yeah, Lynn and I and my brother will be making the trip as well. So it's going to be a fun little weekend for Michigan State, Ohio State on Saturday. We're looking forward to it. For now, I'm happy to be here. We have a lot to cover. And when you pulled into the parking lot downstairs of the studio here, you looked at me with a kind of a dirty look. And I thought you were mad at me, but I knew you were mad about something. And I said to you right away, I said, why are you in a bad mood? And I think you're going to get into that today. I'll say this, the show is much better off when you're in a bad mood, and I think we have a really good show because you are in such a salty mood tonight. So why don't you tell us a little bit about why you're in such a bad mood today?
Well, my baseline mood is misery. So, like, that's just normal.
Well, it's all relative, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're in bad mood even by your standards.
Yeah, I'm always in a bad mood. So today, just in particular, just life in general and things we've got to discuss tonight, just aggravating. We'll see. I was going to ask you something about. Oh, did you hear? You know, before we get into our topics, and we'll discuss that. But we didn't even talk about this in our 25 minute build up to the show discussing show topics, as we actually did some show prep tonight. But did you hear today, D'Antonio's
with Lynn Henning?
Lynn.
Oh, it was so great! It's funny that is now both of the Michigan State juggernaut coaches that Lynn Henning has been into some type of a confrontation with. Yeah, obviously he had the issue with Tom Izzo in 2010 after the flirtation with the Cavaliers. So that's still on YouTube. Very awkward. That went on for 15 minutes. You look at D'Antonio's face, highly recommend anyone that hasn't seen this go find it. I mean, Lynn Henning, what an embarrassment.
Well, here's the thing about Henning, okay? You know, it's the same thing that happened with Izzo over the, you know, the Cav stuff and the Dan Gilbert and all of that. He drops in out of nowhere, you know, because he's not a beat writer, obviously, for Michigan State.
And that's what Izzo resented, too. He said, you know, you're kind of parachuting in here. He says, you haven't been, that was 5 years
ago.
But Izzo said, like, you haven't even been up here in months. Like, you know, you're parachuting in now complaining about my media relations, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Exactly.
Like, this is like the third time you've been up here in the last year and a half. Like, you know, it's funny.
Well, let's reset and say what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the question he asked D'Antonio, which, once again, the Tigers are used to this nonsense of him asking these long, rambling questions where he's basically, it seems like he's putting on a show for the media more than anything else. But his question to D'Antonio today was, everybody always talks about Michigan, Ohio State, and this region, and then said something like, I think, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And D'Antonio just gave him a look. Like, what the?
He gave him a look and said, not really. Yeah. You know, which.
Who are you? Yeah, I wish you'd have said, who are you and what are you doing here?
And I don't even think, you know, it's funny because Lynn Henning, what he said, it's not wrong. I mean, there is good reason to discuss Michigan, Ohio State. When ESPN polling ever does, hey, what's the best rivalry in sports, it's typically number one or number two. So it's not even that Lynn Henning said anything particularly crazy, but it's just a dumb thing to say.
No, it'd be like coming to a press conference of mine and saying, you know, a lot of people say that Terry Foster is a great columnist and really good on the radio. And like,
rightfully
so. And I'd be like, and my reaction would be, What the fuck are you talking about? If you're gonna come out of nowhere being a Tigers baseball beat writer and show up one time a year and you're gonna ask some rambling question like you're some professor, and you're talking to D'Antonio. D'Antonio has a mindset where he doesn't want to hear about Michigan. I mean, we know that, and he walks in there clueless to the world, just. And I'm just going to ask, you know, how everyone focuses on the other school, which you spent the last, what, seven parts of a decade trying to change? It's just Lynn Henning being clueless, as always,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, completely out of touch with the situation and lacking in any tact whatsoever. And it's really typical Henning. It's something we've seen repeatedly. And again, the Tom Izzo thing in 2010 was a worse version of this. But I will say, I don't think he said anything crazy. It's just out of touch and aloofness out of him. And again, we see a guy that should have retired a long time ago and continues to put out this dreck. Now, I want to talk a little bit about that weekend coming up here at the end of the show, but we want to get into the Rochelle Riley stuff.
Let me reset what we're going to talk about tonight.
You set this up because I really want to get into this Bill McAllister shit.
So we've got a bunch of crap to talk about. We will start off with Rochelle Riley and Bill McAllister labeling me both independently within about 24 hours as a wannabe who doesn't have a job in sports talk radio or in the newspaper. We'll discuss that. I posted an article about former Red Wings trainer John Wharton. We tried to get him on the show. We'll discuss that. And your relationship with Wharton, maybe you can give him a little bit of a defense to what I wrote today. Obviously, after the break, we're going to come back and talk about the Detroit Lions and their victory, their maddening victory on Sunday, and perfect timing. It seems like almost every Tuesday at about 4 o'clock, someone pisses us off with an article in the Free Press or something that gives us about a half hour of show content. Tonight's recipient of the abuse that they're going to get from you and I is one Jamie Samuelson, a favorite whipping boy for the DSR for the last 13 years. He wrote just an absolutely ridiculous column about Lions fans and their expectations. We'll get to that. We'll also hit on Sergei Fedorov's embarrassing retirement ceremony that you and I went to a week ago tonight and some information that I learned about that subsequent to that humiliation of number 91. It's the only way I can put it. And I think we'll talk about the Abdulkader contract extension as well. Try to get a guest on about that. We're still, you know, looking into that. But so you can probably see by those show topics alone why I'm not in exactly, you know, the greatest.
Fact that there's like nine things to talk about in the last 6 days,
and they're all misery. I mean, it's just all, you know, nastiness. But let's start off with Rochelle Riley and Bill McAllister, because that is something that has occurred since last Tuesday when we did our last episode. Just to reset that real quick, Rochelle Riley wrote an article in the Free Press, a column, basically stating that the Lions should keep Jim Caldwell. He's building something good here. He's a great coach. He's got a pedigree. He's won everywhere he's been. It was nonsensical. It was a joke. A lot of people in the Detroit sports media attacked her for it, not as viciously as you and I, but they criticized it.
Yeah, and we spent about 30 minutes breaking that down last week, and anyone that wants to hear the breakdown that hasn't heard last week's pod should go and download it because we took her down pretty strongly.
So she ends up going on, I think maybe a day or two after our podcast. She went on the lowly rated 105.1 afternoon drive show hosted by Rat Dreary and Not the Sharpest Drew. Absolute ratings death on that show. And then they added Rochelle Riley to the mix, where she went on to talk about the reaction on Twitter and said, oh, it was mostly positive, which it wasn't. I mean, if you read her timeline, she was getting crushed.
Yeah.
Not just by me, but by a lot of DSR followers and a lot of just people who don't even know who the hell I am.
I'm not sure I saw a single voice of support, which is what made her comments that most people were positive hilarious. Again, the proof's all there.
So she says, well, everyone was nice and everyone was, you know, positive, and even they disagreed with me, except for one guy who is a wannabe sports writer, which, of course, once again, everybody in town referring to me without actually using my name. As John Neo from the Detroit News said, I am Lord Voldemort. Is that what it is? I'm not a big fan of those movies. Nobody is allowed to say my name. So within 24 hours, we had Rochelle Riley bombing me and calling me a wannabe. Then I find out the next morning from about 20 people, like my phone starts blowing up on between text messages and Twitter and Facebook, that on the 97.1 morning show hosted by Bill McAllister and Michael Stone, that McAllister also went after me without naming me, again bringing up the wannabe label that you know, that I'm just some guy who throws stones and I don't have any skin in the game, or that I'm just a guy with a blog and who wants to be on the radio and who wants to have a newspaper job, which I've been hearing this for 13 years.
You're going about this the wrong way if your goal is to break into the media. I mean, really, from day one of this site, it has not been the actions of someone that was posturing for a job, that's for sure.
Like I've said before, if I wanted to guarantee that I would never get a job in Detroit Sports Talk Radio or with a newspaper, what I've done since the day I started the Detroit Sports Rag would have been a perfect plan. I've gone after everyone. I've attacked everyone. I haven't done it politely. I've been nasty. I know who I am. I don't look in the mirror and see a nice, great guy who's just really, I've got an objection with something you say, and I take it, and I handle it in a level-headed way. No, I'm psychotic. I'm a psychopath. I know that. And I know that I'm never going to get a job in Detroit Sports Talk Radio. I'm never going to get a gig writing. I've never applied for any of these things. Never tried. I've got a good job that I make my own hours and make good money, and I'm allowed, because of that job, to have this hobby. But let me address, because anyone listening knows the story. I really don't really have to explain myself to anyone. I really don't care. But I want to talk about Bill McAllister calling me a wannabe. I mean, wannabe what? Do I want to be you, Bill? Is that what I want to be? You're not you're so far off the radar of this website that we don't even discuss your show because you're not a sports show, which is fine. You're on a sports station. You discuss pop culture, you shave Stoney's back, you're not a sports person, Bill. Nobody respects you in the sports world. You have no juice. What I have on my website is about 10,000 times more influential than anything you've ever done, Bill McAllister, in the sports world. I drive conversation. I post articles that even if the people who refuse to name me the next day, they're talking about the stuff on my website. Mike Valente has made a career of taking his opinion, my opinions, and making them his own. This is not something. What do I want to be that I am not? I have an audience. I have a fan base. I have followers. Because I don't attempt to make money on this, that I turn advertisers away? That's why I'm a wannabe? I mean, I have someone who wants to sponsor this show, to do live reads, to have giveaways, and I don't even follow through on it. I've had people want to sponsor the website. Three or four people right now would do advertisements on the DSR, and I don't even follow through because I don't want to be beholden to someone calling an advertiser and saying, do you know what Jeff Moss said today on his podcast? Do you know what he wrote? I don't want it. So what do I want to be, Bill? Do I want to be a guy who is trying to be Jay Towers, Bill? Is that what I want to be? I want to be Jay Towers, a single white female, because you've patterned your life from your clothing to dumping your girlfriend of like 6 years when Jay Towers introduced you to someone new and you dumped your longtime girlfriend and then married this girl because you want to be like Jay Towers. You want to be in with Jay Towers? You're trying to morph yourself into Jay Towers? Is that what I want to be, Bill? Is that what I want to be? Do I want to be the guy in 97.1 back in the day who got caught reading Michelle's emails that you got walked into, Bill? And Michelle said, what are you doing? Why are you reading my emails? Is that what I want to be, Bill? Do I want to be the guy that used to fuck around with interns and Jessica? Is that what I want to be? No, I don't think it is, Bill. I'm happy with what I am. You be happy with you what you are, which I'm not sure what it is. A host of a show on a sports talk station that doesn't talk about sports, but that's fine. I don't talk about you. So keep my name, or not even my name because you refuse to say it, keep the thought of me out of your mind. Don't come after me again, Bill. You want to get this even uglier than it is? Call me a wannabe. What do I want to be? I am what I want to be.
And you know, the pure arrogance and condescension of this man to call you a wannabe, and as you say, a wannabe what? One of the favorite features of the DSR over the past few years, I instituted at Jimmy Petro's advice, a regular column that has been sort of recurring and not so recurring over the months, but where we cover the radio topics in Detroit, sports radio, sports used very lightly. I want to talk about the last 2 weeks alone. The last 2 weeks alone, the things that Bill McAllister has pitched to his audience on a sports radio show. Here are the following topics from the last 2 weeks alone. What's your biggest customer service complaint? Who would your woman go to pick up with in the lady pond? I don't even know what that means.
Wait, repeat that one?
This is, quote, who would your woman pick to go with into the lady pond? I think it's a reference to who would your wife want to have a threesome with. Well, like, what would be the woman?
Why can't you just say that?
I think
what's
that's
a
what
lady
that,
pond?
I think that's what that means. I'm not sure. And then a couple days after that, the great hard-hitting sports topic of, quote, is taking away Christmas too harsh of a penalty for a 10-year-old? Bill saw a train wreck, didn't like it, and has his taste in movies questioned. When did a performer ever stop a show? Parent-teacher conference adventures. How did you find out she was cheating? What was your job the last time the Lions won
a Green
Bay?
How did she find out that he was cheating? He was hanging out with Jay Towers and his new girl. I think that's how he found out.
Maybe that's what they were talking about.
Is this what you want, Bill?
Bring
it on, Bill.
The last 2 weeks alone. And I'm going like every third one here. It goes on and on. Stoney has an interesting idea on how to combat terrorism. Bill gives his thoughts.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's exactly what I want to hear.
This is sports. Toys for your kids you really bought for yourself.
Is this what I want to be?
What,
is this,
this
what
is
I
what
want to
be? What is the most overplayed song ever? Have you ever been injured by food? Were you named after someone famous? What's your favorite infomercial? That is what this motherfucker discusses in the last couple weeks alone. I didn't make a single one of those up. You know how Simmons will do the, like, I'll say five things and I'll make one of them up, but it's like you get – I didn't even make any of those up. Those are all topics from the last couple weeks alone that this fuck discussed. So
– wait a second. Have you ever been hurt by food?
Have you ever been hurt by food? Yeah.
What does that even mean? I don't even – I can't – forget the fact that 97.1 supposedly a sports station that's airing this crap. I don't even know what half of those topics are even pertain to.
How about this? How far is too far when calling out someone for parking illegally in a handicapped space? Have you ever hooked up with a cougar? I mean, this is what they talk about every single day. I pulled stuff from the last couple of weeks, and it's what did I list, like 27 topics? I mean, it's unbelievable. That, you know, if that's what you want to do and you're making a paycheck, you're making a living, you're paying the bills – doing that shit, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to question what someone does to make a living wage. I don't care. You're doing honest work. You know, as long as you're not hurting anybody, fine. But if you want to get on a pedestal, you want to put yourself on that high horse and start telling other people that they want to be you, I'm not sure what this guy thinks we're aspiring to do or be. But if I'm ever on the air asking you if I think the Loch Ness Monster is real, shoot me in the fucking head. It is unbelievable that someone would have that much gall, someone would have that much self-importance, that they would take that job day in and day out and extrapolate that into something that you would aspire to be and you're jealous of, and that's why you're so vitriolic.
Yeah, right. I'm vitriolic and angry because I'm an angry human being. That's what people have never understood. I'm an angry guy. This isn't an act. This is me. Spiro can attest – more than almost anyone in the world, that's just me. I go off, and that's how I am.
I mean, I videotaped myself burning your invitation to my wedding. I mean, you and I have had a very contentious relationship over the years, and we pull through. But, you know, for whatever criticisms I'll levy against you, you know, it's nothing really that you don't admit yourself. You know, you're stubborn, you're an angry guy, you overreact sometimes, whatever. But the one thing I'll say, you're not a wannabe. And again, I introduced the point and you affirmed it. From day one of this website, you have done every single thing not to get a job in the media. So if your goal – like when did the failure take place? That's what I want to know. Because if you're such a big asshole – in this context, because you failed, where was the failure? Where was like the application that got denied? Where was?
I guess what they're talking about is the fact that Rob Otto's failure at Sima Barak Jr.'s station. Where look, that was another thing that they came to me. Rob Otto said he wanted to put me on the air, and that never came to fruition because Rob Otto got fired by Sima before he could even do anything. If someone comes to me and says, we want to do something with you, like Ryan Schuling on 92.1 FM in Lansing, says, look, Moss, I want you on every Monday at 1:30. Okay, I'll do it. Yeah. If someone comes to me tomorrow and says they want me to write an article for the Metro Times once every 2 weeks or something, I'll be happy to do it. But I am doing what I want to do. And his other, according to the DSR people who are actually listening, his other comment was, that I'm afraid of the media. What? Who am I afraid of, Bill? Drew Sharp, who I went after personally, and you can watch the video on YouTube. Who am I afraid of? I show up every year at the Tom Kowalski charity event before he passed away and after, and all the Detroit sports media is there, and I'm right there. Anyone wants to come up and say something to me,
and people have.
As many people have, including Shannon Hogan, who used to work for Fox Sports Detroit.
And your poor wife has gotten bombed.
My wife's gotten bombed. Jennifer Hammond wished me bad luck and karma for the rest of my life, and then turned to my wife and said, you could do much better than him. So, I mean, where am I hiding? I'll be there. It's December 17th, a month from today. At the Lodge in Kego. I hope you'll be there, Justin. Hopefully we'll have a big DSR turnout. What am I afraid of?
I don't want to dwell on this too much. I really want to talk sports topics like how precocious are your kids with high-tech gadgets? What's the best heavy metal song? It's amazing that these are literally the most overused and misused words. Was Stoney's neighbor being a Halloween Grinch?
Wait a second.
Who is the hottest chick that Derek Jeter had sex with? How much stupid shit do I have to say before I run out? I'm only in November. I mean, I'm in November. We're not even halfway. What are we? Just past halfway through November.
Maybe one day, I can host a show talking about John Abrams, Stoney's neighbor, and if he, I'm guessing. I wonder if that's the person.
Your thoughts on trick or treating, pro or con? I mean, that's the shit that these guys talk about.
You're making that one up. Why don't you give me three? Make up one. Let's play a game. Well, maybe Jessica could play. Take two that you like haven't games. Read. So, or you can take two. She was smoking, so she didn't even hear.
Don't talk about one.
So, make up one and then read two and see if Jessica can guess which one of these topics was not on a sports show.
Okay. So you want three, two that are real,
two are real, one that's not real.
And this is
Jessica,
this
is a sports station.
Jessica has to answer this. Okay. All right, let me pull these. Okay, here we go. First one. Remember, two of these are real and one's fake. You got to guess which one is fake, okay?
Okay.
Who should be the last nude Playboy centerfold?
That was on a sports station.
Yes. Well, maybe. Maybe I made it up. I don't know.
Wait. We listened to all three first.
Was this woman rightly fired for being too fat? What was the scariest movie of the 1990s?
So which one of those was wasn't on a sports station?
Option three.
Well, she got it right. I guess they are a sports station after all.
Wait, was it the movie one?
The movie one. All right.
I think we've exhausted Bill McAllister talk for one day. But keep going after me, Bill. I've got more information. You know who I know. You know who I talk to. This isn't the end if you want to keep going and calling me a wannabe. I think it'll probably be the last time you do that or mention me at all. So do you want to talk about your boy Johnny?
Yeah, let's talk about Johnny since I don't want to discuss TV shows you want to see come back, which is another
Twin Peaks,
real topic.
Which is coming back. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about that for an hour and a half.
Let's talk about Twin Peaks.
If you want to be Bill McAllister.
I want to be him, so let's talk about it. Twin Peaks was one of my favorite shows when I was in high school. The first year was one of probably the best show of all time, Justin. I know it was before your time. I don't think you were even born. And it's coming back on Showtime.
That's great.
It's coming back.
Why
David
you call
Lynch,
the Bill show?
Kyle MacLachlan, a lot of the original cast. Laura Palmer obviously dead. She won't be coming back. But I can't wait for Twin Peaks to come back. Am I Bill McAllister now? Have I
an official sports show?
Yeah. Am I now attained?
Yeah.
Am I no longer a wannabe?
You must be disappointed that you didn't call in the day they were discussing that.
I could have talked about Twin Peaks for at least a good 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's about how much time they spent on what TV show do you want to see come back.
You want to talk about the Log Lady? Okay, go on.
Yeah, let's talk Johnny Wharton. Now, for those of you that haven't seen already, I would go to DetroitSportsRag.com or at Jeff Moss DSR to see the link to the article on John Wharton. John Wharton was a trainer for the Red Wings for many years, left after the 2002 Cup run. I don't know if you remember several months ago, he referred to himself as a three-time Stanley Cup champion. Remember, he got mad at you because he deleted that tweet.
Well, yeah, that was the genesis. Now, like I wrote in the article, John Wharton, I think about 12 years ago, left his job.
After 2002.
As the trainer of the Red Wings. And he really hasn't been on my radar at all, obviously, since. I mean, he wasn't really on my radar when he was the trainer of the Detroit Red Wings. But in the last 6 months or so, he's friendly with Greg Henson, and he's friends with like Art Regner on Facebook. So I'm not friends with him, or I don't follow the guy on Twitter or Facebook, but his comments just constantly end up in my feed. I just see them, and as I said in my article today, he's basically the offspring of Curt Schilling, Lance Berkman, and Ann Coulter. He is your angry right-wing uncle who you just kind of want to ignore. Now, you can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat. This guy is so far to the right with his nonsense and his anti-Obama rhetoric, his anti-LGBT comments. You can't read 6 months worth of his feed, which I think Mihir Bhatnagar did for us, our DSR researcher, without coming away with the fact that on every topic he views, he looks at it as in a black and white, anti-African American way. I mean, you can't, there's no other way you can come across, comes across. The other day, he said something that was so insane that I decided I finally had enough. And I wanted to, you know, post an article about this lunatic, maybe to shame him from stopping this nonsense. After the Paris attacks, which obviously we're a sports social, we're not going to talk about very much, only in this instance, that he tweeted to Henson the following quote, okay? Quote, "We have been at peace with Japan since September 2nd, 1945, 2 days after Nagasaki. Time to make peace with Islam," unquote. So what he was basically saying is the reason we have peace with Japan is because we dropped two atomic bombs on them, and then they made peace. Completely ignoring the fact that ISIS or ISIL or Daesh or whatever the hell they call themselves, it's not a country. They're all over the place. They're in Belgium. They're probably in the United States. They're in Syria. They're in Iraq. They're in Lebanon. They're all over. So I would like to know where John Wharton wants to nuke.
I mean, he said that ISIS threat indicated that there's members of ISIS already in Michigan. So I don't know if Michigan's going to be put on blast.
Yeah, why don't we just nuke Michigan, Dearborn? I mean,
you can't take
any
chances.
There's a lot of, as he would probably say, Arabs. In Dearborn, why don't we just bomb that? I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you get. And it's all anti-gay, anti-African-American, which, okay, whatever. I mean, we've seen that on – you see that all over Facebook. But for someone with all the answers, you know, and who thinks Obama's a joke and a clown, don't you think that person would have a handle on their own life? You know, if you're living a perfect life, Justin – and you're, doing great in business and you got a great family, maybe you can take shots at other people. But we're talking about the John Wharton who was arrested a few years ago because he was behind on child support. He's currently, according to the website, the Michigan Department of Corrections website, still under probation for this. The man is a wreck. He was, a couple years ago, Officer Barbrady, Chris McCoskey, wrote an article about he was selling online his three championship rings. So you're out there telling people how, you know, over and over how they should live their lives. He's calling people who are on welfare awful people. You couldn't pay to support your kids, John. You ever hear of glass houses? It's just ridiculous. And like I said, the guy, should I have even written this article? You probably could debate that.
Yeah, I mean,
the guy was a part of.
You know, it's not like the most hard hitting, relevant piece you've ever done. But I think it's something of interest. I mean, just that he's so far out there on these views, and it's a guy that was a trainer for the Red Wings for several. Key years there. So, I mean, I don't think he's
trainer.
Hugely relevant.
He was the trainer. Okay, we don't think he thinks he's hugely relevant. Every time I've gone after him, he says to me, well, what have you done in your life? I got my name inscribed on the cup three times. Like, you were out there on the ice? You were the fucking trainer.
That's just that. I mean,
you were the trainer. You were out there with Slava, Sergey, and Vladdy, you lunatic. You were the trainer. And you weren't even a trainer like Lefty Wilson back in the 50s and 60s when there was no backup goalie. I don't know if you know this, Justin, but there was no backup goalie. So if the goalie went down and got hurt, the trainer would come in. So you could make a case that Lefty Wilson actually played in games, and if he wants to say my name's inscribed on the cup three times, I'll listen to that from Lefty Wilson. I'm not going to listen to it from you, you derelict John Wharton.
And, you know, at least the statement that his name's on the cup is a statement of fact. And, you know, it, and again, it, I don't think that means he didn't accomplish anything. I mean, he had a good job and... You know, but when he refers to himself as a three-time Stanley Cup champion, which he's done.
Wait, hold on a second. Listen, I will listen. This is his narrative. It's the whole Mark Spindler, second Harold Reynolds. You know, I played the game, so I know what I'm talking about. Those type of guys throw out to you when you're arguing sports with them. John Wharton makes that same argument, except for you never played the game. You were the trainer. Don't lecture me that you know what you're talking about because you've been in a clubhouse. Should the guy who polishes shoes also know more than I do?
I'm wondering if we can get...
You were the trainer!
Do you think we can get four-time Stanley Cup champion Karen Newman on the show one time to discuss her role in the cup runs?
How about three-time champion Mike Abdenauer? Let's get him on there.
How about four-time champion Mo Cheese? I mean, you know, at what point, like, where do you cut it off? Like, what's the bottom rung of still being able to say, I think he's at it, right? Like, he's at the cutoff.
How about Letitia, who sold Little Caesars pizza at the stand at the Joe for all four cups?
I think that's one step below Johnny Wharton. But, you know, I'll say this, and your arguments are valid. And when I had said that I was going to defend John Wharton, there was a blowback against me saying, you know, how can you defend these borderline racist, borderline homophobic remarks? And that's not what it's about, you know. But the important thing is, if I have an experience with someone that was positive and very positive, to be frank, I'm not going to ignore that when criticisms are brought up. We had an issue in our official Detroit Sports Rag Fantasy Baseball League where someone that was one of my best friends had an issue with me. We're not going to get into the whole story, but had an issue
please
with me.
No. Please, we're not.
But no, I'll be quick. But there was this crusade against me, a large-scale accusation against me. And this is a guy that had 1,001 positive experiences with me and didn't interject. And I didn't appreciate that because this is a guy where even if he wanted to criticize me on this, which it turned out to be invalid as well, but if he wants to criticize me on it, fine, but feel free to chime in with all the positive experiences. You know,
what was your positive experience with Wharton?
Paint the full picture. So that's what I'm going to do.
He rehabbed
you? My point is this. I had a very positive experience with John Wharton. Now, we talked this week and last about the surgery I just had, and it had been a 7 to 8 year ordeal for me, seeing about 15 different doctors, had sort of pain or like the hip region, groin region. I mean, just really the whole kind of system was jacked up. And different multiple diagnoses, never really figured out what it was. And my mother-in-law heard an advertisement in 2011 or 12 for this company Blast Pain, which is some people think it's quackery, but I know they helped me. And John Wharton was doing work there with their cold laser therapy. And what they do is they just wave a magic little laser wand over you. But, it's FDA approved. It's actually a legitimate medical treatment that's really catching steam. And Johnny Wharton was there as their head of wellness and worked with me repeatedly over the course of several months, probably, I would say, no fewer than 25 sessions. And when I had first started there, John was part-time and could not, with his assigned hours, see me as often as I needed to be seen for what I was being treated for, and which later turned out to be a hernia that was misdiagnosed. But he went above and beyond. He took on, they paid him. It's not like it was charity, but he took on extra hours to continue working with me. I had progress with him that I was not seeing. It's not just waving the laser on you. They do certain movements with you and it's a whole physical therapy thing. He was far better than anyone else there.
So your personal experience.
And my personal experience.
John Wharton was good.
This is a guy, I have to give more detail. It wasn't just, he was a good employee. This is a guy that took on extra hours to take care of me, that would call me multiple times a week when, you know, to follow up, to ask how I'm doing. This is a guy who, when I would be returning to Chicago for law school, would call me and say, hey, you know, the first time I went back to Chicago for school, I hadn't made an appointment in a couple weeks, obviously, because I was out of state. John Wharton called me, left a nice two-minute-long voicemail on my phone telling me that, you know, he wants to make sure that I'm okay, and you know that if I can't afford the treatments going forward,
I'm
he can
sure
work
Stalin
with me on
was
it.
Nice to dogs.
You don't understand. This is a guy you want to pin him down as this evil guy. This is a guy that
quote. So Obama's administration has decided that you can't say Merry Christmas in school, but if you're a teenage boy who identifies as a woman, you can shower with teenage girls. Unbelievable. Oh, looky there. The White House is all lit up like a rainbow in celebration of the Supreme Court's ruling legalizing same-sex marriage. That's the gayest thing I've ever seen. Need I go on?
Again, I don't know what that has to do with what I'm saying.
It's called entertainment.
I've already conceded those points. I'm not saying he's the best guy in the world or he doesn't see some crazy shit. I agree with you on all those criticisms. I'm just saying... Your article called him a, quote, scumbag in the headline. I think he said some scummy things, and he has some whacked out political views. But this is a guy that went above and beyond, not just with me, but with multiple patients that I had a lot of success with, really the only practitioner that I had any success with until I finally had the proper diagnosis.
As outrage against white cops and Republicans roll on, the party of Abraham Lincoln, he of ending slavery fame, shrugs its shoulders. Republicans have done and will always do more for our African-American brothers and sisters than any other party, period. Hashtag unite.
You got to be very, very careful with painting the broad brush. That's all I'm going to say. There's a lot of things people say about you that aren't so nice.
Welfare. If you are doing hard drugs, you obviously don't care about your own. You don't care about your own. The man who was in jail not paying child support. I think you've stated your case for John Wharton. He was supposedly going to appear on tonight's show. I guess Henson kind of put a
kibosh
on that a little.
Yeah, because they have their own little sort of acquaintance friendship thing. I mean, it's not really clear. I mean, they have each other's cell phone numbers. I know that.
Well,
you know. So again,
one more thing before we go, and you did. Listen, I let you talk about your personal
experience. The guy's not a complete total scumbag. I saw him with me, and I saw him with multiple other people.
I understand.
He showed tremendous kindness to me and multiple other people. Could not have been nicer. And frankly, a really entertaining guy that I would love to have as a guest to talk about how he had to give Dominic Hasek a condom every time they landed on a road trip off Redbird 2. I mean, this is a guy with
what?
This is a guy with fascinating stories about who was sleeping with whose wives. I mean, this is a guy, he is a smorgasbord of great Red Wings opinions from those mid to late 90s teams, early 2000s, a great era for Red Wings hockey.
I'm sure Dominic Hasek is thrilled that a guy in his own locker room is telling patients that he's rehabbing about his sexual proclivities.
Yeah,
great guy.
I'm sure he's equally thrilled as Matt Derry sending you DMs saying, between you and I, Jason Whitlock smells like asshole. And then you tweet the screenshot of the correspondence with Derry saying, between you and I.
Yeah, time out. I don't like Derry anymore. What is?
I don't think John Wharton has the best relationship with the Red Wings anymore.
What about Hasek? Hasek is okay. You've made your point. Jessica wants to go smoke, so we're going to go real quick here.
Don't put this on me.
One more thing.
I like it when you're angry. It's amusing.
One more thing. He got into a fight with Jerry Green on Twitter, too, which was our own Meher, who's got a fake Jerry Green 87-year-old man Twitter account. In the bio of his Twitter account for Jerry Green, it says, do you people really think an 87-year-old man is on Twitter? And Wharton, the other night, like, I don't know, 1 in the morning or something, gets into it with Jerry Green. He says to him, you are a miserable old man. You are supposedly a respected journalist. I will sue you for slander, you drunk.
This is in response to a tweet from me here as Jerry Green saying, why did you delete your tweets, dog?
When he first bombed him, called him a miserable man, and said that you're supposedly a respected journalist and called him a drunk, Meher had quoted a Johnny Wharton tweet about Michigan football going after Sparty, And all Mahir said was, this guy went to Central Michigan. And that was his response. And then it got uglier.
I just remember specifically.
Right. It got uglier.
I just remember the Jerry Greene account calling Johnny Wharton, quote, dog.
Yeah, so then he called, so the next tweet, Jerry Greene.
Like 87-year-old Jerry Greene's calling people dog.
He calls him dog, and here's Wharton's response. Oh, and your point is, you nasty drunkard, my lawyers will be in touch with you soon, moron. And all I could think, this is at 11 o'clock, I think, on Sunday, and all I could think of is poor Jerry Greene walking with a walker to the phone to get a call from his attorney saying, why are you baiting Johnny Wharton, the former Red Wings trainer, on Twitter? The guy's threatening to sue you. And Jerry Greene just, what? What's a Twitter?
What?
And then calling his wife and saying, I don't know what's going on this devil thing that rang. This devil device. I don't know.
It's funny. This is the second time in a week that someone has called the Jerry Greene account a stupid old man. Sam Martin, the punter for the Lions.
Yeah.
Like this twice in a Sam Martin and Johnny Wharton have both gone after the fake Jerry Greene account, calling him a stupid geriatric. This poor Jerry Greene gets dragged into these things.
Can you imagine? And the best was, and we're going to go, I swear we're going to a break. The best was, a few months ago when this started happening and people were bombing Jerry Greene, Michael Hara had to go on Twitter and say, I spoke to the real Jerry Greene earlier today in California, and I can most assuredly tell you he's not on Twitter. It's a great.
How did Mahir land on picking Jerry Greene?
I don't know. We got to get Mahir in. I think Mahir is going to be in the studio next Tuesday.
He picked the one person that he just knew would like never be on Twitter to dispute.
It was either, you could have picked either a dead person or Jerry Greene. All right, so maybe Mahir will be here next Tuesday to explain that whole thing, because it's like an hour worth of comedy in itself. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about Jamie Samuelson, the Detroit Lions, and some more. So hope you enjoyed the first 46 minutes of this nonsense.
This is a previously recorded episode.
All right, we're back on the DSR podcast. I think before we get into the Lions, Justin wants to read an email from John Wharton.
Yeah, we were looking at having Johnny on the show, and we had one last ditch effort to get him. Pulling up his response here. He says, nah, I'm out with my oldest son for his 22nd birthday. I don't need the grief. Maybe another time. Thank you. So, unfortunately, there will be no Johnny Wharton rebuttal to your article.
I don't think we'll ever get John Wharton on the show unless we schedule it for like 1:15 in the morning. I think if we did it at 1:15 in the morning show, I think you could bait him on becoming on.
What are you implying?
I'm not implying anything. I think he's a night bird. Yeah. A night owl.
He's a night
owl, I'm sorry. Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about the Lions. Obviously, they broke the 24-year streak against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday in a game that they were extremely lucky to win. As I stated yesterday on Ryan Schuling's show in Lansing, quite possibly the worst scenario playing out for the Detroit Lions. Are you taking pictures?
You're on Periscope.
Oh, you're Periscope. I don't want to be on Periscope, you dumb
you're,
shit.
You were Periscoping me before.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Hold on. If you're going to Periscope, I might as well at least Periscope it out to my people so they can watch. Hold on a second. This is professional broadcasting, let me tell you. DSR Radio Show Live. Thought we were going to save this for next week when...
I'm not doing it the rest of the time. Just wanted to give the people a little
all right,
look.
I'm going
to
share it. Hold on a second. Jesus Christ. Share. Well, now we got feedback. What the hell's that?
That's you.
That's me. I'm sorry.
Dumbass.
All right. I just shared it.
Please turn your radio down when you're calling.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Please turn your radio down before you call. The host of the show can't even handle this. So anyway, the Lions did... like I said, the worst possible thing they could do. I think you agree with me, Justin. The one chance of things not changing with the Ford family is probably a good, I think, still a good finish by the team this year. 8 games left. People are telling me I'm crazy, but if they go 5-3 or something, you're telling me that there's no chance that Sheldon White isn't retained as the general manager and Jim Caldwell's not the head coach? We've seen this play before. We've seen this franchise under Martha Ford's husband do the exact same thing. He hired Martin Mayhew with no interview process whatsoever. I take the Ford family at face value when they say things, because when they say something, it usually comes to fruition. So if she's telling Sheldon White that even though he's got no control over the roster, basically, that the draft's months away, the free agency's months away, that if they win, that's the way for him to keep the job, I'm sorry. I believe it. And especially with Jim Caldwell, who we know she already has an affection for, and these Lions fans celebrating that win on Sunday when it could lead to quite possibly another disaster. We know, we found out that Gil Brandt's report that the Lions had hired a search firm. What are people, what are you laughing at over there?
I'm laughing at Gil Brandt and people making fun of your vest.
It's a nice vest.
Nobody wears vests anymore.
And now I'm getting bombed by Jessica.
That was like a drive-by, too.
She left to go smoke. The fuck?
So, yeah, I was more actually laughing at Gil Brandt, who's just every other week he's reporting something wrong.
They didn't get a search firm. They didn't hire anyone to find the next general manager and president. So why shouldn't I believe that if this team goes on some win streak against all odds, that you might end up having this regime carried over?
And it's a legitimate concern, and it's something I got into with more than one or two people on Twitter about this, how some of these fans are out there celebrating like this team won the Super Bowl, and it just shows such a short-sighted view. It's no different from when someone roots against their team, you know, to get a draft pick, which is, you know, in part the case here. It's a little bit bigger than even that.
They went from, but, by the way, they went with that win from the first to six, the,
yeah,
to I, six I in the draft. That. I mean, yeah. And people are happy about
with
this.
With three home games on the
celebrating.
Docket.
I don't give a shit about the, if, like I said on the radio yesterday, you wanted to break the streak at Green Bay? Do it last year when you could have got a bye. Or how about a couple of years ago when you're going up against Matt Flynn, a backup quarterback? I don't think they played Clay Matthews. Half their team wasn't playing, and they still lost when they could have avoided going down to New Orleans to play Drew Brees in the first round.
In the Superdome, which is right. A total buzzsaw when Brees was in his prime.
Exactly.
Nobody
break the
there.
Streak then, not in a game where it's meaningless. Most of the fan base who have a brain want them to lose so they can broom everyone down there at 222 Republic Drive in Allen Park and get a good draft choice. And then we've got to get lectured. Why don't you go into a jizz bucket? Jamie Samuelson, the person who the last time the Lions had an opening suggested that they hire Ken Holland as the general manager. The Detroit Lions, who, by the way, Ken Holland getting destroyed by everyone in the Canadian media, and we'll talk about the Justin Abdelkader contract coming up. That's who he suggested should be the Lions' general manager, a guy who's not even a good NHL general manager at this point, or hasn't been for years.
Samuelson, one excerpt, he writes this article basically saying that fans should be happy that the Lions ended the streak, that anyone suggesting that it was somehow a bad thing is misguided. And, you know, he says at one point here, quote, "One day history will tell us what Sunday's game means. We know it means that questions about the streak are over." Okay, who gives a shit about the streak? The streak has nothing. Frankly, I embrace the streak. As someone that likes this organization being shamed, I liked it. But throw the streak out the window. The streak has no bearing, good or bad, on this team's ultimate goal, big picture goal, or at least what should be the goal of any professional team, to win a title. I have no time for anything or anybody that drives me or the team I root for farther away from the ultimate goal of winning a title. And that's exactly what that win on Sunday did. I don't care about this. The streak is something cute. If you could tell me the Wings, this is, you know, throw the Wings out of it. Talk about the Miami Marlins, formerly the Florida Marlins, okay? A common hypothetical and a topic that was going around on the Valeni and Foster show a few years back was, would you rather be the Tigers in perennial contention or and never get it done.
I like to call it dick tease mode.
Or the Marlins, who win a title, you know, and then go in the shitter for 7 years, win a title, and then go in the shitter for 8 more years. Which one would you rather be? That was an actual
the Marlins,
and I think it's a legitimate topic.
The Marlins,
yeah, obviously the Marlins.
I won two titles.
I would rather have two titles and 18 last place finishes. Then 14 dick teases and two, you know, third place finishes and a few last place finishes. There's no question. I don't give a shit about, you know, third place. Who cares? I mean, it's about titles. No, but this whole and this isn't even that. This is about
wrecking everything.
This is about a meaningless streak, and it's a funny streak, but it's really meaningless. Just like the Red Wings year after year making the playoffs now and not going on a deep run. It's nice, and I like the playoff streak. Don't get me wrong, I like being viable and having that shot every year, especially in the NHL where you see random teams win the cup every other year. You know, that 8 seed Kings. You know, the 8-seeded Oilers come within a game, you know, whatnot. I'm great with that. But anything that contributes to a big picture step back towards that goal is bad. And any fan that embraces something that is a big picture step back is the misguided one and is, frankly, quite stupid. And Samuelson is on this crusade against, and this is, he had multiple tweets about this. Any fan that is upset about the draft implications that were at play here is an idiot, is ungrateful, is failing to embrace this great moment in Lions history.
Yeah, he called it, he said it was a great moment.
Yeah.
What? You dumb fuck? I mean, it is incomprehensible to say that what happened Sunday was good for the franchise when you know the people who are running it, okay? Who are fooled by things like this. This isn't one of the other 120-something franchises in professional sports where you could say, look, they're not going to be fooled by this. Sheldon White had no effect on what happened last in that game on Sunday. He can't do anything to improve this team. This is Martha Ford, a 90-year-old woman, and her 3 daughters who don't know anything about professional sports, and who have not gone and done the bare minimum and hired a firm to vet potential replacements. This is an atrocity. This is a joke. And for Jamie Samuelson, who's been in this town for 20-some years, to not see what could be coming around the corner and saying, oh, just celebrate this victory, you dumb fuck. You vanilla piece of garbage. Stop. This is just the DSR mindset that he's going after. Now, it's not just the DSR. There's plenty of people who we've who have now adopted this thought process when rooting to lose when it's beneficial for your franchise. Makes you a bad fan, according to people like Jamie Samuelson. Someone who just doesn't get it. He does not get it at all.
I mean, and someone on Twitter made the point of, do you really want to have the high draft pick and the salary cap implications? Showing, and this is something I've heard repeatedly over the years, something that may have been relevant, you know, 5 years ago before the institution of the rookie cap, where having to pay, say, Matthew Stafford or Sam Bradford this, you know, huge contract was crippling. That's not even at play anymore. Since the rookie cap was instituted when Andrew Luck came into the league in 2012, that's out the window. I mean, it's wholly irrelevant. You want to get the best draft pick possible. Yeah, you're going to pay a little more with the rookie scale, but the difference between the number one pick and the number four pick or sixth pick, it's not devastating.
Even if the Lions played a clean game on Sunday and they just came out and they looked like a different franchise, and they were running on all cylinders, I would still make the case that it was an awful thing to occur just because of the dynamics involved with ownership and, you know, wanting to completely clean house. That's not what happened. You saw play out why they need new management. Twice on Sunday, they didn't have enough men on the field to attempt a blocked field goal. 10 men. And Jim Caldwell says it was his fault.
Including on the critical last field goal.
To break the streak. They had 10 men on the field. And the guy just shanked it or whatever happened.
He kicked it low on it. If you look at the replay, the Lions did not even have good pressure on the kick. He just
of course they didn't. They only had 10 guys on the field.
Mason Crosby just kicked it low and it hit off the butt of the long snapper.
Did you see the offense? Did you see? At one point I tweeted, I think around halftime, I'm glad Jim Bob Cooter is giving an homage to Vince Lombardi's grandson. In the house that Lombardi built, it was such a joke. And if it wasn't for Abdullah's kickoff return, I mean, the offense wasn't moving the ball. It was the same boring, lousy offense. They miss extra points, two of them. They get 10 men on the field twice. This Caldwell doesn't even know he doesn't even know when to take penalties. If it wasn't for the NFL rules being so stupid that they allowed him to decline that fourth and two.
Fourth and two, yep.
Then when you realize that, of course, McCarthy was going to go for it in that situation near midfield, down, you know, when they were down horrible team. Yeah. You know why Caldwell didn't realize they were going to go for it on fourth and two? Because Caldwell wouldn't have gone for it on fourth and two. Because he's the worst coach in the NFL.
Like, literally ranked by USA Today, dead last.
He's terrible. I
mean, it's not just crazy Detroit jaded.
Okay, what if they go and beat Oakland? What if they go on Thanksgiving and beat the Eagles? These aren't exactly the greatest teams in the world.
No, I think they're going to lose those games.
Oh, we don't know. You thought they were going to lose to Green Bay. You could easily
obviously, we don't know anything.
You telling me you can't see a situation where they go somehow win four or five games out of the last eight? And this woman doesn't keep them. I'm telling you, I've seen it happen with this franchise.
No, I mean, if they go 4-3, I think she keeps everyone. You know, because she's going to look at, we went 5-3 from the time that these changes were made. And you had this running gag on Twitter with Sheldon White. It's like, you know, he's going to do everything he can to improve the team this year. It's like, what's he going to do? Like, go get Barry Sanders from Kroger, you know, a 20-year-old Barry Sanders? I mean, there's really nothing much a GM can do at this stage of the game.
It's like saying, airplane is in the air, what's the mechanic going to do that's on the ground?
Yeah.
The plane's gone. He's got no control. That's what a general manager of a football team in late November, he's got no control. So he can add someone from a practice squad.
I mean, the team could go undefeated, and that would be an argument to keep Caldwell.
To bring back Mayhew and Luan. That would be the argument.
I'm saying, but that's not going to happen. But I'm saying where we are right now. I'm not saying it's a good argument. We both know Caldwell's bad. But at least you could make the point if you're Martha Ford of the Lions, look, Caldwell's there. At least Caldwell's having a direct influence on what's going on and what can happen from here on out. Sheldon White doesn't have that influence.
Jamie Samuelson, you once wrote an article. Actually, you wrote it twice. You wrote it twice, Jamie, saying that the Lions should replace Matt Millen with Ken Holland. You said it twice. How do you have the fucking balls to ever write anything ever again after having such a horrible take? And then you don't even own it. You don't even own it. When your former broadcast partner, Greg Brady, on Twitter calls you on it, you say you were joking. Except for I have the archive version where you repeatedly say, I'm not joking. I believe this.
No, that was anything short of that is just backtracking. I mean, that was a very genuine take, and that's something he thought was intelligent.
Not only should you quit your job as a blogger for the Free Press if you have that take, you should jump off the Bay Bridge.
Is that Ken Holland comment the perfect segue to the Abdelkader contract?
Perfect.
Ken Holland can't even manage the Red Wings properly. He's going to go across the street and go to the Lions facility.
What's the equivalent in the NFL of bringing Michael Samuelson back and signing Jordan Tutu to a 3-year,
there's no equivalent.
$6 million contract?
Even the worst
letting Hoodler go.
Even the worst NFL teams are too ruthless to do that. It's too cutthroat. I mean, all pro guys get cut, you know. The Ken Holland has been on a nightmarish run, and the Justin Abdelkader contract was atrocious. And you know, we talked to a guy in the league ahead of this show that said, good for him. It's going to be good for the rest of the players in free agency next year. So the players love this kind of thing. The Abdelkader contract is ridiculous. And as a Spartan and Red Wing fan, you know, obviously I like him. I don't think he's a bad player. But you're paying Abdelkader second-line forward money, and he's really a solid third-line guy.
Or fourth.
I mean, he's not like a top. He's not a legitimate top six. He had a very nice year last year. I think a bit of an aberration.
He had a great year. He played 80% of the time last year with Henrik Zetterberg.
Well, and he could play the rest of his career with Henrik Zetterberg. I don't think he's going to be averaging 24 goals a season the rest of the way. This is a guy who he's not 23. I mean, you know, he kind of is what he is at this point. And you see guys like Matt Molson with the Islanders who popped up and scored 30 goals back-to-back years and then went right back to what he was for the first eight. You know, Advocator had a nice year, and he's a nice player. No one's saying he sucks. But you can't pay a guy
like that.
He's
a decent player who they should have said, we will give you a four-year contract for 14 or 15 million, yeah. And said, that's it. Because, you know, everyone's saying, oh, yeah, the term's too long because it's 7 years. Well, yeah, the term's too long. But I'm sorry, the money's too much also. When you've got Pulkkinen, DeKaiser, Helm, Tatar, all these guys coming up for contracts, okay? You don't have the money in a salary cap era where you've already got Johan Franzen, if he doesn't go on long-term IR, eating up dead weight, right?
Yep.
You've got Jimmy Howard, who you're paying, if you don't trade him, which he should have done in this offseason, or he should do it at any time, because what's he getting, $5 million a year when you don't, yep. when he's a luxury? Peter Mrazek should be playing 65 to 70 of the games and get any backup here to play the rest. And if you know what, if Mrazek gets hurt, oh well, that's what was meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, go trade for Jonas Gustavsson again. I mean, who cares?
Yeah,
just get a guy that'll give you a 260 goals against. I mean, who gives a shit? It's your backup.
Having Jimmy Howard and Mrazek is so redundant. It's goddamn ridiculous already, okay? He has botched this cap to the point where even if a free agent wanted to come here, I don't know how they're going to get him because they've got to re-up all of these guys. Where's the money going to come from? And let me tell you something. You don't think Thomas Tatar's agent is just salivating when he goes into contract negotiations? A guy who, by the way, can play with just about anyone and score 25 goals? He doesn't need to play with Henrik Zetterberg 80 to 90% of the time. And he can score on 5-on-5, not just on power play. What's he going to ask for when he sees that Justin Abdelkader got 7 years and $30 million? What do you think Tatar's going to want? And Ken Holland's going to play that game that he's good in the room and there's intangibles that you can't see to Tatar's agent? Where do you think that's going to go? He's going to say, do you see how much money you gave Steven Weiss? You see how much money you gave Justin Abdelkader? I mean, how is he going to negotiate with anyone? Not only has Ken Holland completely screwed up his own franchise, if you read the Canadian press, universally panned this move, not just for the Red Wings, but what he's doing to the salary structure in general, paying a guy who's a 10 to 12 goal scorer under normal circumstances. That's what he's been his whole career, except for the anomaly
He had seven seasons where it's, you know, eight goals, ten.
Right. He had one anomaly of a year where he played a lot of power play time and he was playing with a world-class player. Other GMs have to be absolutely livid at Ken Holland, who, by the way, Jamie Samuelson wanted to be the Lions general manager. This guy has not only screwed up free agent contracts, he's completely set the new paradigm of trade deadline deals by giving quality prospects out for guys like Eric Cole and David Legwan. This guy is an abomination at this point. He hasn't made a blockbuster trade. You could say the Robert Long trade. I don't know. I go back to Hasse Kozlov. He has done nothing except for live on the back of scouts of Jim Neal, Håkan Andersson, the 1989 draft. This guy is bad now. It's not just ambivalency with him, you know, because and he's not good. He's a bad manager. He's bad.
I mean, and you mentioned like Zetterberg's influence on Abdelkader and getting the power play time, and it's so true. You see it in the NHL repeatedly. Again, you know, I mentioned Matt Molson. A lot of people remember the San Jose Sharks player Jonathan Chichu, who, as soon as he got Joe Thornton in California with them from Boston, he goes from a middling non-factor scoring 8-10 goals a year to scoring 56 goals.
You want to go back here? You want to go back to the Red Wings before you were even born? This was the greatest one. There was a guy named Warren Young. He was a left winger for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He played with Mario Lemieux. Okay, back in the 80s, you could have put a corpse on the line with Mario Lemieux and he'd scored 40 goals. Okay, Warren Young had a huge season. He might have scored over 40 goals. I can't remember. I have to look up the stats. The Red Wings signed him to a free agent deal and put him on. He couldn't do anything. He was terrible.
Well, and you see it with Chichu. Yeah. You know, Chichu had 56 goals, 37 goals, and then Marlowe shows up. They put him on the second line, and he goes down to 20 goals, to 12, to 5, to going to the minors in his 20s. So this is a guy that went from 56 goals, 37 goals in his early 20s to out of the league by the time he was 27.
Here's Young's stats.
There was no injury at play either.
Here's Young. He played that year with Lemieux. 80 games, he had 40 goals and 32 assists, 72 points. Next year with the Red Wings, 22 goals. Then the next year, he was with the Baltimore Skipjacks.
Yeah, I mean
that's that was you know, it's easy to see. And every person who follows the advanced metrics and sabermetrics with hockey saw this contract as a joke.
Well,
he's the laughing stock of the league. And the only people who are defending this trade are slapdick Red Wing fans.
Not a trade, but...
Contract extension. Yeah. Are slapdick Red Wing fans. That's it. Everyone else. Either you believe in math or don't believe in math. Everyone sees this as a joke.
Yeah, even the non-Saber crowd doesn't like the contract. I mean, I don't know the first thing about hockey analytics. I'm sure, you know, it's not to say I discredit them. I don't know anything about them.
Well, basically, a lot of it is, and I'm not that well versed in it either. But a lot of it is puck possession. A lot of it is what you do on even strength. How many shots are against? Not just shots on goal that hit the net, but shots that you take. Against you, for you. It's a lot of that stuff. So you don't have to get that deep into it to know that Abdelkader just is not that great of a player. And you can go and you can transition this into, and I said this on Twitter, my honeymoon with Jeff Blashill is over, because his complete ignorance of hockey sabermetrics and analytics by continuing to play Luke Glendening 16, 17 minutes of a night. Luke Glendening cost the Red Wings a point last night. Okay? He couldn't get a loose puck against Bobby Ryan, and then he did his best Victor Espinoza on American Pharoah imitation on Bobby Ryan, just riding him. And while Ryan scored the game-tying goal, which, as Topher Ryan, our DSR hockey expert, said, that was a big point for Ottawa to get, because that's a team the Red Wings are fighting with. This wasn't playing Edmonton or Dallas, where who cares? If they get a point because they're not in our conference, this is a team that you're probably going to be fighting with all season long in your own division, and you just gave them a point by putting Luke Glendening again against the team's number one line. After watching the game we went to last Tuesday, the Sergei embarrassment night, the public shaming of Sergei Fedorov.
Sergei embarrassment.
The only thing they didn't have is that woman from Game of Thrones while Sergei walked out to drop the puck between Ovechkin and Zetterberg with that bell yelling, shame, shame. That was the only thing missing from that ceremony. Glendening gave up like 17 shots or something to Ovechkin. And other than Peter Mrazek just bailing him out all season long.
Ovechkin has 14 shots on goal or 15.
Shame, shame. Unbelievable. How are they continuing to put Glendening against the number one line? It would be like the Lions just taking Calvin Johnson and putting him on the bench because he was being double teamed. Well, we might as well just take him out. That's what the other team they're forcing. So the Red Wings are saying, if you put out your number one line, we're going to put out a combination of Drew Miller and Luke Glendening and whoever lost the lottery that night to play with them. It's the worst combination analytically in the NHL, those two. And you're putting them against the number one line of the opponent. It's maddening. And they play against Washington tomorrow night again.
And you look
at... Is he going to do it again?
Ovechkin is probably the greatest goal scorer, just pure goal scorer of his era. Will finish with 700 goals as long as he stays relatively healthy. And for all the production he's had in his career, in that game, set his career high for shots on goal in a game.
His arms had to be tired. It was like the rope-a-dope.
It was unbelievable he didn't score. And there were good chances.
Let's put Glendening out there just to tire him out. How many times can he shoot?
Do you realize how bad the line had to be that Ovechkin had the most shots on goal of his entire career for a single game? I mean, do you realize how many times that guy's peppered the goalie over
and that's how good Mrazek was that night.
It's unbelievable.
And okay, we'll wrap it up by talking about Sergei in a second, but they're playing in tomorrow night. Is he going to do the same thing?
I think so. I don't think there'll be any change. You know, and I think overall we're on the side of that it was a positive change for the Wings, big picture, going from Babcock to Blashill. I think you tweeted that you like 80% of what he does.
I like
and there's
a lot.
There's a couple huge blind spots.
He's done some very good things. He's playing Pulkkinen, something I'm not sure Babcock would have done. He's broken up Jonathan Erickson and Nicholas Cronwall. He's playing Larkin as a top six forward. Who knows if Babcock would have done that. I mean, you could go down the line of things that he has done positive for this organization since becoming the head coach. But you cannot just ignore that he continues to play 16 to 18 minutes a night. The two worst players in the league, basically, against number one lines. You want to play those guys against a fourth line? Okay, I'm not going to complain too much. But why, you know, someone tweeted it out to us at the game the other night. Ovechkin needs to work in his own zone. That's where his weakness is. So tomorrow night, match him up against Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and whoever else is on that line. So he's got to do some work in his own zone so he can't take 27 shots on goal. How is this hard to figure out? We can get more of this maybe next week.
We got about five minutes left. You want to talk about
probably think that I'm not listening to anything you're saying, but I'm just feverishly trying to find somebody to come in and do your hair next week. I'm on a mission.
It's incredible that we're not paying Jessica to be like a professional looker-upper of a wrangler of potential.
I can run your shit.
I mean, it's incredible how difficult it is to pay someone to carve that into your head. But, you know, we'll find someone to do it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, I know plenty of hairdressers, but none that do what you want. But I know a couple people who know a couple people, and those couple people will get back to you.
I don't think they offer, like, at Floyd's Barbershop, the get John Palmarosi's name carved in your head option. I don't know many people that
do
that.
No, there are hairstylists that are traveling. So there's that, and there's plenty of them.
Yeah, I mean,
because you want to do it in studio.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and everyone prefer that, obviously.
Yeah, well, yeah. So. It needs to be Periscope, but we're going to continue.
Okay.
No, that's a good interjection. It's an update that we are hoping to have something positive on soon. I mean, it's been a relentless pursuit.
We've only got a week. We got to do it. So
I don't know. We can.
I want to say I can get it done in a week, but I will commit to saying I will get it done in a week.
We'll do the best we can. Now, I want to talk about how Moss and I were told to, quote, go back to Russia when we were advocating the jersey retirement of Sergei Fedorov during the ceremony. I will say that the Red Wings fans, when Sergei was introduced and came out to do the ceremonial puck drop, the same thing that they do for active military sometimes, and they do for people that have been 25-year season ticket holders get to do from time to time. That was the same thing Fedorov got to do. He was put no higher than a 25-year season ticket holder. But we were told when we were chanting a two-man chant of retire his jersey to go back to Russia, and there was this feeling in the stadium where even though the applause was strong, the opinion of the fan base is still somewhat less than fully enthusiastic. I mean, he's still not entirely embraced in the city. And the fact that we were getting heckled for the advocacy of a jersey retirement is very telling.
Well, I mean, the fans are taking the lead of the owner of the franchise, who, as we reported earlier this week, they had nothing basically planned at all to honor the man. I mean, they announced this in the offseason. Sergei Fedorov was elected first ballot Hall of Fame for mainly his service to the Red Wings. I mean, obviously his 13 years in Detroit much. I mean, you can't compare what he did in Anaheim and Washington and Columbus. I mean, it was for Detroit. They announced they were going to do a ceremony for Fedorov and for Lidstrom. And I can't wait to see the Lidstrom night in comparison to the bare bones of what they did to Sergei.
It's
going to
be like the end of episode one, The Phantom Menace, when they're celebrating on Naboo and they're handing translucent globe that glows up and you know, there's a parade down the town. I mean, it's just it's going to be
– yeah.
I'm sure they'll at least have a montage that isn't buried at the halfway point of
the third period.
When, you know, there's already like 20% of the people have left. You get those people that leave like a tie game with 12 minutes left, you know, stuff like
that. And as I reported and I learned from a couple sources, they had nothing planned as late as like Monday night. They didn't tell Cicerelli and Ted Lindsay that they were giving Fedorov that painting. Until like 3:30, 4 o'clock, I was told, on Tuesday, 3.5 hours before puck drop.
I like that.
The whole thing was slapped together like a DSR podcast, for Christ's sake.
I like that Sergei Fedorov, for all that he did for the Red Wings over a decade and winning multiple championships and one of the best postseason performers of all time, got the same treatment that Vince Vaughn got in Wedding Crashers. Just here's a painting of yourself. And
yeah, that's bullshit.
The painting was a gift, Sergei. Like, you know,
did they charge him for it? Did they charge him for the framing?
I don't know. I wonder if the artist, you know, got into bondage with Sergei Fedorov the night before. Well, it's again, you had a ceremonial puck drop that is something they do for active military, which I'm not saying isn't a nice thing. But Sergei, there was no distinction between Sergei Fedorov, one of the 5 or 6 most talented players to ever play for this team, and that's saying something.
I'd say he's number one.
He might be number one, I'm just saying I could make that argument as well, and I'm not even sure I disagree with that, but I'm just saying no matter – you can be the biggest hater in the world. He's one of the best 10. I mean, even if you hate him, you're going to admit he's one of the best 10. And he was treated no better than a member of the active military, which they're doing a nice little ceremonial thing they do once a year. Again,
he was treated worse than Tom Gage. As Brian Kavanaugh from the DSR, great point. He juxtaposed he had a photograph. On top was Sergei standing by himself dropping the puck, and then on the bottom was on Comerica Park on the field, people from Olympia Entertainment or whoever it was giving Tom Gage, not an employee of the team, beat writer for the Detroit News, giving him this nice picture, honoring him, throwing out the first pitch. They did more for Tom Gage, a journalist who was supposed to be adversarial to the Tigers. He wasn't. They did more for him than Sergei Fedorov. And to end this, as I said, we basically been told that he will not have his jersey retired, if he ever does, until Mike Ilitch dies, which is an absolute travesty. You're too young to remember, once again, but the Red Wings were horrible when Mike Ilitch took over the team. They were so bad that they had to give away cars every night for people to show up because that's how bad attendance was. It was worse than the Pistons last couple seasons. That's how bad. They were called the Dead Wings.
Dead
Wings. They were a laughing stock. And Mike Ilitch bought this team, and even when they got Yzerman, they still couldn't get over the hump. They were toyed with by the Edmonton Oilers teams back in the day when they even would advance in the postseason. Not until Sergei Fedorov came around did this team win a Stanley Cup, and he brought them 3. And if you take into consideration how hard it's been for Mike Ilitch to win a World Series in Detroit, you'd think the man at 86 years old would have a little more appreciation for what this man did than to humiliate him in front of 19,000 people last Tuesday night.
And there's something that'll be, I wouldn't say completely empty, but somewhat empty of a different owner being there for a ceremony retiring the number. I mean,
Marion always loves Sergei.
When Mike dies, I think the sale of the whole thing might be expedited from what I'm hearing. I know we have a few sources on that.
I don't care.
But you know,
I don't even care. Topher said it doesn't mean anything if it's in the new arena. I just want to see Sergei's number retired. I don't care who does it.
Well, yeah, obviously that's the – it's not – again, it doesn't completely nullify the significance of it. But in the perfect world, it would be Mike Ilitch at Joe Louis Arena honoring Sergei.
He was there. He was there that night.
Yeah.
We know that. And, you know, look, the people that need to know – no, he's a petty man. They can see that. They could see that last Tuesday night. They could see that with Sparky Anderson. He could see it to a lesser extent with Trammell and Gibson. This is a petty man who you'd think has the world by the balls and wouldn't act in this pathetic manner, but he does. And his latest axe to grind is Sergei Fedorov. And it just, it's really, it says a lot more about Mike Ilitch than it does about anybody else.
And on that note, we will end. You and I are going to go to the Pistons game and see LeBron at the Palace. Next week, be sure to tune in. We will be discussing Moss's favorite color, Jessica's favorite thing to do on a weekend in the winter, and my favorite 70s
slasher
film.
That's not suitable
film.
For radio.
What?
And hopefully getting his hair cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be
with
doing
a name
that.
In it.
We'll be doing that as well. And, and we'll then solicit calls from people asking them what are the craziest haircuts they've ever had for an hour.
We should. That would be a great tie-in.
Yeah.
Because I want to be Bill McAllister.
All right. Well,
you want to have a sports show?
fuck the media.
You want to have a sports show?
Yeah, I want to have a sports show.
All about sports.
Yeah.
And as we always say, thank you to Jessica for being here, putting up with
our
shenanigans.
Thank you, guys. You guys are hilarious. I'll take it.
Great to have the help, and we do appreciate it. We're going to go. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Detroit Sports Rag Podcast. We'll be back next Tuesday. Thank you very much.
This is a previously recorded episode